Oh, there's been many a books, many a movies, many a preachers have predicted and warned against this day, but she's never quite seen it this bad. In fact, most of the time when they've had a few scares, you know, the radicals always rise up and they have their theories on what's going to happen. But when it doesn't really come to fruition, they just kind of disappear. But this time, everything is different. When it first happened, the food prices skyrocketed. And the grocery stores were less like a place of commerce, and they became more like a free-for-all in the middle of a boxing ring. In fact, brother has betrayed brother. And friends have killed friends to provide for their family. In that regard, no one really blames them. After all, a man has to do what a man has to do to provide for his own. But there has to be a better way. There has to be a different way. And the widow, she's worried. She's worried that she doesn't have enough. She remembers that first Thanksgiving after it happened. Some people in her apartment complex, they all got together and they threw a feast. Because rumor had it that it was going to be over soon. And now they all kind of look back at each other and think, man, if only we had all of that food that we wasted that first Thanksgiving. Because now they're getting ready for their third Thanksgiving. And it's not gotten better. And since that time, they've learned how to ration their food. Oh, she's so thankful that her mother taught her how to can. Is there anybody who still knows how to can? Anybody who still does it? She learned how to can, and she's so thankful because it preserved the little food she had and made it last longer. And when she didn't have enough, she remembered what her mom always used to do. You know, when there was somebody uninvited or unexpected for dinner, and there was only enough food for four, and there wasn't any more food in the fridge, and you know what her mom did? She went into the kitchen and said, add a little water, we need to make it go a little further. And even though water is scarce, it's preserved the food. It's made it go further and therefore last longer. The widow is worried. She's worried every day when she walks to the cupboard and sees that the supplies are getting lower and lower. She's worried that there won't be enough. She's worried that she will run out. As Thanksgiving approaches, she realizes there is no Thanksgiving for those who are worried that they don't have enough. For it must be a Thanksgiving famine. The widow is weeping. She walks outside to try and clear her head of all the unthinkable thoughts. For now, she's not worried that she doesn't have enough. Now she knows she doesn't have enough. For her worst fear is being fatally realized. She thinks to herself, what am I going to tell my son? If he was still a little bit younger, I might be able to hold him off and trick him a little bit longer, but I can't make this one up. He knows there's not any food left. What am I going to tell my son? The widow is weeping. She's weeping because she wonders how long it takes a person to starve to death. She's weeping because selfishly she hopes she dies first, so she doesn't have to watch her son suffer and die. But her motherly love won't allow that. As hard as it would be to watch her son die first, she hopes that he does so that he doesn't have to suffer and die alone. The widow is weeping because she thinks, well, maybe we ought to opt out. It's pretty popular these days. It's easier to get to opt out than it is to know the fate that's coming to you. But she just can't bring herself. She can't bring herself to do that. Finally, she realizes something. She's just been walking all this time and didn't really know where she was going. And she's been weeping and had all these thoughts, and it got to a bad place, and she thinks, I got to snap out of it. And when she snaps out of it, she finds another reason to weep, because she doesn't remember how she got there, but she had walked the roads and made the turns, and there she stands in front of her husband's gravestone. She recalls the many times she has stood on that hallowed ground, weeping, thinking to herself, I wish he was here. He always knew what to do. I need him here more than ever. I remember the countless times I stood here and thought, it can't get any worse. But it's gotten a lot worse. So she turns and says, goodbye, honey. Something doesn't change. We will see you soon. And she begins to walk, and then she remembers why she went on a walk. It wasn't just to clear her head. It was because, she had to gather some sticks to build a fire for the final meal. She walks outside of the cemetery gates, and there a stranger comes and meets the widow at Zarephath. A widow that is worried because she doesn't have enough. A widow who is weeping because her worst fear of not having enough and not being enough is finally realized. And as she's gathering sticks, she has her back turned, and a stranger, sounds like a foreigner, maybe even a refugee, everybody is displaced these days, who says, excuse me, ma'am, about scares me to death. Doesn't he know to have any manners? You don't sneak up on a lady like that. Says, ma'am, do you have something for me to drink? Who does this guy think I am to prey on a widow like this? You've got to be kidding me. Of course she thinks it. She doesn't actually say it, and she decides, you know what? I know what my mama has said. Add a little water. You can give him a drink. So she heads off and she goes to get his drink. And then he hollers, and bring me a sandwich too. You have got to be kidding me. Who is this guy? Who does he think I am? McDonald's? Come on. I barely have enough. I'm going to go teach this boy what his mama ought to told him when she raised him. Then she hears the voice of her mom come back. And then she listens to a voice inside of her, and it's almost like the voice is saying, do what he says. So she comes back and says, sir, the truth of the matter is, I only have a little oil and a little flour. Truth of the matter is, I don't even have enough for my son and I to eat. The truth of the matter is, sir, I was gathering some sticks so that we could have a last meal together. And the displaced refugee said, I hear you, ma'am. But first, give me some. And then do what you were going to do. For I serve a God of Israel. It's name's Yahweh. His promise to you, if you will do first for me what I've told you to do, that jar of flour, it will not run out. That oil, it will not run dry until the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Israel, will send rain upon the land. And the widow thought to herself, I don't know. But I guess really, what do I have to lose? For 3 years I've been rationing what I have left. The truth is, for 3 years I've been protecting it. I've been holding on to it. Because everybody wants what you have when you're in a famine. And the only thing I knew to do was to hold on to it. And I've done my best. And no matter how much I've done, it still isn't enough. We are still in a famine. We are still going to die. So maybe I've been wrong. Maybe it's not about holding on to what you have. Maybe it's learning to let go of what's left. You see, there's no thanksgiving when you're worrying if you have enough. There's no thanksgiving when your worst fears are being realized that you aren't enough and you don't have enough. And there's no thanksgiving when you don't have anything left, but there is thanksgiving. Maybe there is thanksgiving when you learn to let go, to release what you're holding on to. For this is the God who I remember hearing stories about. The God who parted the Red Sea for His people. The God who could make water come out of a rock for His people. We have lots of rocks right now, but no water. We could use that God. I could use that God. This is the God who sent manna down from the sky onto the dry ground. We have a lot of dry ground and no bread. We need that God. I need that God. What do I have to lose all this time? I've been trying to keep it together, and you see how that works. I'm in worse shape than when I began trying to keep it together. Maybe I ought to try. So the widow at Zarephath puts the Lord her God to the test. And He opens up the heavens. And that jar of flour didn't run out. And her cup of oil didn't run dry. Because she learned to give what she was trying so desperately to hold on to. Elijah's widow gave out of what she had. And then she had to learn how to give out of who she was. You see, her and her son and Elijah celebrated their third Thanksgiving. They thought they weren't going to make it, but they did. But it was shortly after that third Thanksgiving that her son developed a cough. She wasn't worried about it at first. It was kind of that time of year where everybody gets a cough, but the cough grew worse and worse. And then her worst fear came, and it was that cough turned into a fever. And when the fever came, she knew it wasn't good. Just a few days before Christmas, his breathing grew shallow. Then his breathing stopped. Where is that man of God? I'm going to hunt him down. Man of God, where are you? Did you bring God close to me just to reveal my sinfulness and punish my son for it? Because he's gone. What you going to do about that, man of God? It's one thing for the flour. It's one thing for the oil. But now you're messing with my son. Man of God said, where is he? Give him to me. The widow thought, oh no. Nope. Last time I gave you something, it worked good for a while. But that's where we got. I gave out of what I had, and I didn't feel that because I didn't have a choice. But when I have to give out of who I am, I can feel that because He's part of me. That's painful. That cost me something. But I guess I really don't have much choice. So the man of God takes him upstairs. He lays him down on his bed. Spreads him out. Elijah covers himself just the way the boy was spread out and cries out to the Lord, "Lord God of Israel, what have you done to this poor widow? You have multiplied her flour and oil only to take her son. Bring life back to him. Bring life back to him. Bring life back to him." It's as if the man of God knew God does great work in 3 days and three times. And life returned to the boy and he set up and Elijah carried the boy back down and gave him back to his mother. And the widow thought to herself, "It's true. The God of Israel lives. It's true. His words are true." That when you're in a famine, the quickest way to stay in it is by withholding what you're trying to protect. It's true. The quickest way to get out of a famine is to release what you're holding on to. It's true. The widow's name, we don't know. The man of God's name, of course, is Elijah. I suspect today that some of you are in a famine. I suspect today that some of you are in a financial famine and you're in the corner and you're pacing because you're worried about whether or not you have enough. In fact, whenever the preacher says something about tithe and talks about the tithe being 10%, something in your stomach begins to churn. It's almost like you're going to your checking account known as the cupboard and you see there ain't enough for 1%, much less 10%, dude. And you're worried that there isn't going to be enough. And what you've been trying to do is to hold on to what isn't enough and to protect it. Because you know what people do when there's a famine. You know what happens when there's a financial famine. Bills that you didn't even think you owed, they come out of the woodworks to nail you, man. Just when you're trying to do what's right, somebody else wants your money, and then you got to come to church and listen to the preacher ask for your money. Man, this is a double whammy. I ain't giving to them bills except the minimum payment, as long as they're not interest. Kind of like hospital bills. I'll let my money sit in the account before I pay them it all at once. They can wait. But the preacher, he just doesn't live in reality. Let's just protect what I have. I suspect some of you are there. You're worried you don't have enough. And the truth is, you want to know what the truth is? You don't. You don't have enough. I suspect some of you may be in that fearful stage where your worst fears are being realized and you're weeping. You think you're weeping because of what I just said, that you don't have enough and you know it. You've been trying to fool yourself and everybody for a while, but you know it's not enough of whatever enough is. But the truth is the same truth for the widow. You know why the widow was weeping? It wasn't because of her circumstance. It was because she didn't know that there was a God she could trust. She didn't know about Deuteronomy 10 that says God defends the cause of the widow and supplies food and clothing. She didn't know that verse because she wasn't a child of God. She was a Gentile who had never heard the Torah. She didn't have the Bible to tell her promises. She didn't know about Psalm 146:9. Did you hear it read at the start of service? What does God do? He sustains and watches the way of the widow. She didn't know that. She didn't know there was a God she could trust. And some of you are weeping today because financially you don't have a God you can trust. That's what it is. You don't know about Malachi 3 that God says, test me in all of this and see what I will do. You test me, you do it, guess what I'll do? I'll open the heavens and your little checking account on earth won't be able to contain the blessings that I'm pouring out. Some of you are in a financial famine and God's calling you to give out of what you have and you're saying it's not enough and you're trying to protect it. You're trying to hold on to it. Can I ask you something? What do you have to lose by trusting Him? The more we try and do it, the more of a mess we become of it, and the longer we're in the famine. So what do we have to lose? How about a better question? What do we have to gain? God will pour out His blessings. Some of us aren't in a financial famine, we're in a sacrificial famine. Some of us have given out of what we've had for so long that it doesn't cost us much anymore. We don't feel it. Truth is, we can give our tithe and offering because God has blessed it and we've done it for so long. I'm not even sure if it's an act of worship as much as it is a habit we're used to. We don't even think about it. And God's calling us to give out of who we are. And I would ask us, when's the last time we gave something that it cost us something else? When's the last time we had to delay a pleasure of life, a toy? I just lost all the men. Cable TV. Even if it's for a month. Something, a pleasure, long enough to make a sacrifice. See, we can give out of what we have and it becomes so routine and ordinary that it's not our act of worship. But we're in a sacrificial famine. We'll give so long as it doesn't cost us something that we can feel, that we can wait on. For some of you, that's time. This has nothing to do with money at all. It's only time. I hear all the time, I don't have enough time. I hear all the time sometimes from people, well, I'm just too tired to make it to church. You know what that is? That has nothing to do with having enough time. That has everything to do with having a God you trust. Because a God that we trust says on the seventh day He rested. Why? Not because God grew tired or weary, but He knew we would be tired or weary. And God has a way of replenishing us by doing what He says first in a way that if we stay home and sleep, He won't replenish us the same way. Preacher, do you realize the people who probably did that aren't here to hear it? Uh-huh. But when else am I supposed to say it? The truth is, some of us don't have enough time to do all the things that we need to do. And we're constantly fighting for time to spend with God. Constantly fighting with time to spend with family. To do the things God is calling us to do. And you'd say, I don't have enough time. You're right, we don't. But we have a God who we can trust. That while we try and hold and protect our time, the only way to get out of the famine is to release it and give away the time we're trying to protect. Well, enough preaching. Here a reading from 1 Kings chapter 17, beginning at verse 7. Sometime later the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink? As she was going to get it, he called, And bring me, please, a piece of bread. Surely as the Lord your God lives, she replied, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. And I am gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Elijah said to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land. She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. Sometime later, the son of the woman who owned the house became ill. He grew worse and worse and finally stopped breathing. She said to Elijah, what do you have against me, man of God? Do you come to remind me of my sin and kill my son? Give me your son, Elijah replied. He took him from her arms, carried him to the upper room where he was staying, and laid him on his bed. And then he cried out to the Lord, Lord, my God, have you brought tragedy even on this widow I am staying with by causing her son to die? Then he stretched himself out on the boy three times and cried out to the Lord, Lord, my God, let this boy's life return to him. The Lord heard Elijah's cry and the boy's life returned to him and he lived. Elijah picked up the child and carried him down from the room into the house, and he gave him to his mother and said, look, your son is alive. Then the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord from your mouth is the truth. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We're going to close with a song that sings, One Thing Remains. You know what it says? Your love, it never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out. I'm going to challenge you this morning. If you're in a financial famine, if His love for you will not run out, what makes you think He'll let your finances run out? I want to challenge you, if you are in a sacrificial famine and God's calling you to do something that's uncomfortable, if His love for you won't run out, do you think He's going to let time run out on you? Do you think God is going to let His love endure, but not the things that we need? See, I think God is speaking directly to hearts. So what I want to give you the opportunity to do today is I want you to step out in faith. To make a commitment. If God's speaking to you, to make a commitment. Because here's what I know. It's easy to say, I'm going to make these changes. And then no one helps you along the way. So here's my vow. If it's a financial commitment you're making, and you've been working on this, but it's time. Here's my vow. I will help you in every way I know how to help. There's people in this church that I know, they know more about finances than I do. We will help, because probably some changes will have to be made to get some things in order. But I'm telling you, you don't have to do it alone. That's why I'm going to ask you to come. If you're in a sacrificial famine, trying to give up time or something God's calling you to, I want you to come and make a commitment publicly, not to embarrass you, but because we want to help you. We don't want you in this alone, because you know how God will open the storehouses of heaven and bless you. A lot of times it will come through His people and through His church. And that, my friends, is why we exist.